and welcome to Focus on the Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us today from Autism Delaware, we have its Fund Development and Engagement Director, David Woods. And welcome.
Thank you, Laura. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great. And gosh darn it, it's been a long time since Autism Delaware was on. And before we start talking about how the last 18 months or so have treated you and your clients, talk a little bit. Give us the mission of Autism Delaware.
Well, Autism Delaware is existing to serve and support families affected by autism all throughout the state of Delaware. It's broad, but it's simple. We like to support our families in the unique ways that they need our help.
Well, about how many families are we talking about? Are we seeing more and more people reaching out or saying, hey, I have a child who's been diagnosed, or maybe I'm a little bit older and I've just been diagnosed?
We're finding families are reaching out at all different levels, as with young children and new diagnoses, with older children who are experiencing new and unique challenges in their lives. So we see families from the lifespan of services with adults and children or with small children. But I'm not really sure. We can't really count how many families we're supporting because we support so many in so many different ways.
Now, that's true. You probably don't even see some of the people who are taking advantage of the resources that you provide just through your website.
Exactly.
Well, you started 20 years ago. Do you want to talk a little bit about the history of your organization, but also how things have changed? Because I think the definitions have and the diagnoses have changed so drastically over the last couple of decades.
Yeah, there's been a lot of changes in the last 20-some years that we've been in existence, but the core of how we started is still what we do. We started as a group of families in a living room in North Wilmington, dedicating just to support one another in their journey with autism. And I like to say we've expanded our living room across the state to continue to just support families affected by autism.
And of course, when we talk about autism, it does affect the family.
Yeah, absolutely. It affects the siblings, it affects the individual, it affects the moms and dads, it affects the neighbors, grandparents. It really does affect the entire family.
So now let's talk about what is autism? I'm going to table that COVID question. What do we know about autism?
Well, unfortunately, there's so many things we don't know about autism, and I certainly want to start there. We don't know what causes autism. We don't know that there's a cure for autism. We don't know how people get autism. And so some of the things we don't know are really what make autism most challenging for us and for our families. What we do know is autism is a neurological disorder that impacts an individual's ability to communicate, plain and simple. But it's different for everybody. You know, we like to say if you've met one person with autism, you've really only ever met one person with autism because each experience is so unique.
You know, that I think that is the first time anyone defined autism to me. It was communications. Mm-hmm. Was it an inability or difficulty in communication?
Yes. And we've seen in families that it's not a difficulty in a person's ability to understand. Many individuals with autism, as they're able to grow into communicating their feelings and their thoughts, will come back and say, hey, you know, I understood what you were saying back then. I just wasn't able to communicate it. And so it's not an intelligence issue at all. It's an ability and an inability to communicate, understand social cues, and the like.
Oh, there we go. Communication is understanding social cues. That's a big part of it.
Absolutely.
So how does somebody get a diagnosis of autism? How early can it be detected? Because when I said something about, some people don't know until they're teenagers, I have friends who have said, oh, by the way, I have been diagnosed that I am on the spectrum. And again, you see those quotation marks around that term too.
Yeah, well, so let's back up for a second. You know, autism is more of a general term. Technically, ASD, Autism Spectrum Disorders, defines, like you said, a spectrum of different disorders that are considered under the autism umbrella. And we use autism as just sort of a catch-all for that. Diagnoses are difficult. It's not a blood test or a brain test or, you know, just something where you can prick the skin and find out if someone has autism. It's not something you can catch from somebody else. And again, a lot of the things we don't know are what make it challenging to support families in the first place. In Delaware, there are two different diagnoses that families could and should get, and one is a medical diagnosis, and the other is an educational diagnosis. Each of those diagnoses allow a family to, I guess, receive services and get the supports that they need. And those diagnoses are usually delivered by a school clinician or a doctor or a psychiatrist or psychologist. But you've got to actually go somewhere and get an autism diagnosis.
Is this a case of where maybe you're an only child and your parents don't know that you're not quite at the same developmental level, or you're not reacting the way that another child might at the same age, and then a teacher brings it up?
Absolutely. It's also the case where you may not want to know as a parent and or feel an inadequacy around getting a diagnosis, or your culture doesn't support getting these kinds of diagnoses, or it would be a smirch on your family. And so there's not only the not knowing in families with one kid, there's also the insecurity around getting a diagnosis or being labeled. We're trying to change that narrative because the label isn't necessarily negative if it's something that's going to help you get the supports you need and understand why your child or you are different.
That term label sounds like stigma, but we're seeing more and more diagnoses, aren't we? Is it just because we're getting smarter in detecting an issue earlier, or we're broadening our definitions?
Well, I think there's a possibility that we're broadening our definitions. I don't know that more people are getting autism. The statistics don't reflect that. More people are being diagnosed with autism. Absolutely. 1 in 52 individuals are being diagnosed with autism. When we started, it was 1 in 300. But mostly that's because more people are actually going out getting the diagnoses. Pediatricians, teachers, caregivers are more aware, and so people are getting the proper diagnosis. When I was a child, a person with autism might have been labeled a bad kid as opposed to or weird or something like that, and that's not really fair for the parent or the kid, and so it's much more, I guess, respectable to make sure you get a diagnosis.
Does it run in families?
Well, I mean, you do see an incidence of autism in families where one child has autism and another child may have autism, but I can't really answer your question statistically or know for a fact that it's a genetic issue.
So we don't even know if it's environmental.
We don't know it's environmental. People have many theories. Certainly people will champion one thing or another, and I say champion, I don't mean that in a positive way, but people will blame one thing or another. And it's just hard to tell. And as an organization, we don't want to make any statements or claims about things that we're not sure are true. We support our families and their convictions. You know, our goal is really to help the families where they are, not try to explain how they got there or why they got there. We want to help families where they are now.
Well, gosh darn it, I'm not a famous actress, so I really can't express a good opinion on this. But is there medical research going on right now?
Tons of medical research going on right now. I know they're doing a bunch of things in Philadelphia at the Drexel and some of those hospitals up there doing research. I know they're doing stuff all over the nation and all over the world on this. And there are organizations that are focused on this and fundraising for this and doing this work at a large level. That's not what we do. We don't, I'm not smart enough to do that kind of stuff. I just want to do what I can to help our families locally.
So we're not looking at treatment. We're looking at, is it called therapy? Is it adaptation? What kind of programming is offered to a family when they have a child who's diagnosed? And I know that the sooner you intervene, the better.
Well, certainly the sooner you intervene, the better. There's no cure for autism, but there are services and there are strategies and there are techniques to help individuals with autism to grow not out of their autism, but to grow with their autism, to be able to be productive citizens and just enjoy the world that we live in like the rest of us do. We offer therapy services in a sense. We offer therapeutic services in some ways. We support families with just social rec programs. We support families with adult vocation programs. We do a lot of different things. Our approach to helping families is more of a customized approach to helping them. And so we want to figure out where families are, meet them where they are, both emotionally and geographically, and give them what they need for that time period, and hopefully also give them a little bit of a roadmap for how to navigate the challenges ahead.
When I mentioned that this is a family issue, it really, and you said it affects everybody from the siblings to the grandparents, the neighbors. Everybody's involved when somebody is having trouble communicating and being able to participate fully in their environment.
They are, but at the same time, it can't always be classified as something negative or mm-hmm. a challenge, because a person with autism is a member of the family like anybody else, and they're, things that they do differently are just the things that they do differently. And in some cases, those are the reasons why we love them. And so as much as a neurotypical kid would be loved and adored by the grandparents, a child with autism would be the same, and the neighbors and the coworkers and everybody else. And so while, you know, maybe it takes a village to raise a child, it's that same village that raises a child with autism. And so it's unique. And there are some challenges, but it doesn't always necessarily have to be this sort of arduous negative process.
Well, you did say this is not a sign of intelligence.
No, not at all. Not at all. Many of our individuals with autism, particularly on the Asperger's side, exhibit intelligence far beyond things that I can comprehend. And it's really inspiring to see and to know about.
You just said Asperger's.
I did.
But is that coming? Is that falling out of usage, or are we? Is it coming back?
Well, it's interesting. The language around autism is changing daily, and I think what is driving that more than anything are individuals with autism who are what we would call self-advocates, who are communicating back to us about how they prefer to be referred as. And some individuals with autism want to be referred specifically by their diagnosis. Others do not. And so those of us in the field work hard to say things the proper way and to communicate the proper way. And then here comes an individual with autism and says, I want to be known as an autistic. And then I was taught, you don't ever say that to someone. And so, you know, we're learning and we're changing. I think our world is changing around labels and communications and titles. And it's really cool that the individuals with autism are the ones driving that discussion and are able in this way to communicate to us how they'd like to be referred to and how they'd like to be labeled.
I was just grateful you said neurotypical, because I, you know, eventually that's going to come up in conversation, and I would have no idea how to refer to the other kids in the family. So, you know, you've been around for 20 years, so that means that some of those original kids are now grown-ups themselves. Who's participating in the programming that you offer? And then let's talk about the programming that you offer.
Well, it's pretty cool when you think about the arc of our organization. These families that got together originally, many of them had younger children, and so we developed programs to support families with younger children. And as these families grew, their children grew, and we grew in our programming to support, you know, teenagers, and then those children became adults, and we added programs to support adults. And then those adults, the parents wanted them out of their home like parents do with older children. And so we developed programs for living and for residence models. And so we're developing our programming as the children of our founding families are growing, and we're learning more about them and about individuals across our state.
And hey, if you're just joining us, this is Focus on the Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us today from Autism Delaware, David Woods. He is the Fund Development and Engagement Director. And I had to specify fund, because there's fun here too.
Yeah, well, we're fun too, yeah, so know, don't get that wrong.
I know, when I said it the first time, I thought, well, you know, it sounds fun. Fund Development and Engagement Director for Autism Delaware, and you can find them online at autismdelaware.org. If you type in autism and Delaware, you're going to be able to find them, autismdelaware.org. And they have a great website. You've got a lot of programming and a lot of information there that breaks things down, and it makes it easy for families to reach out to you. So let's get into some of that programming, because you talked about being an advocate for yourself, the kids, but then the parents bear the brunt of a lot of this, especially when the kids are really little, and it is wrestling programming for them, finding places that they can be entertained and enjoy themselves as freely as their neurotypical kids can, and working their way through the education system and making sure that they get a quality education. So there was a question in there somewhere. I want you to just leap on it and talk for a while.
Well, I kind of get where you're going. One of the things, we do a couple different things, but our core of what we do is family navigation. We want to help families navigate their journey with autism. And that journey changes all the time. One of the difficulties with autism is when change comes, it's often hard for an individual with autism to deal with change. And families are able to sort of manage and figure out this stage, and then a new stage comes along, and challenges come with that, that they can't relate to their neighbors who have neurotypical kids, they can't relate to their experience as a kid, they can't relate to what they watch on TV. And so there's a new challenge before them, and said, how do I deal with this new challenge? And that's where we come in. For the first 18 years, people called us on the phone, and we had 16,000 phone calls in a year of people calling saying, how do I do this? How do I do that? And we tried to field as many phone calls and emails as we could, and really it became a little overwhelming for us to do that. We still answer the phone, and we still support families where they are. We're not a hotline. Maybe more of a warm line for families. But we've kind of switched some of our family navigation around to be more proactive than reactive, and developed a program called ACT, which stands for the Autism Care Team. And this is a program that connects with a family and puts them with a family support provider that acts as like a social worker, and works with them over a course of 9 months to a year, and just helps them learn and navigate the situations that they're in now, and maybe even gives them some foresight into what to expect in the future. And some of that is helping them with their school situations, with their IEP maybe, which is the individualized education plan that kids with disabilities have in the school system. And that can sometimes be a contentious environment between the parent and the school. And so we will support families by going to their IEPs and helping them to advocate for their child to get the education resources they need. It may be signing up for social services with the state and trying to navigate those challenges, whether it's on their website or in their filling out forms, and just helping families wherever they are. And so we work, as in the sort of case management model there, where a family will sign up, they'll get a family peer support provider. And those people are individuals that themselves have a child with autism. And so this is someone who isn't just like trained in school somewhere. They may have that as well, but this is someone who's been where they are and can help them just understand and also navigate.
You work with businesses, schools, you work with all kinds of organizations to help families enjoy a good quality of life, too. I know you work with libraries. You've got some great partners out there that help, and then later on work with your POWER program.
Yeah. Yeah, we want to work with the community. Our whole goal is for our families to enjoy the community, and to be out there in the community and engage in the community. And so we will partner with a movie theater to create a special social, I guess what I'm looking
outing.
For is, yeah, social outing, but we want it to be sensory friendly. You know, so we will say, you know, ask them, can you turn the lights on and the sound down, because those things affect sensory issues for folks with autism. We'll work with bowling alleys to create special moments and opportunities for our families. You know, we'll do beach picnics and things like that. We help the Newcastle County Library create a special space for children or anybody with autism. So we do like to connect with the community in any way to develop safe spaces for our families, but also to have this aura of acceptance and inclusion. You know, we do believe that most folks are now aware of autism, and so we don't really speak in terms of autism awareness anymore as much as we speak about acceptance and inclusion.
Well, I alluded to POWER, and that's a great program that you have because, again, once you grow up, you want to continue to be with your peers and being out there in society.
Yeah, POWER is our adult vocation program. It stands for Productive Opportunities for Work and Recreation. It's a one-of-a-kind nationally recognized program that helps individuals, adults with autism, find meaningful employment. And it is a godsend for families. Delaware is a fairly good state in terms of the education system, in terms of the supports available for young families, for children, compared to some of our neighboring states, perhaps. But there's a term that families will often fear, and that's when the school bus stops coming. And there's a point when the kids don't have that same everyday support. And then what do they do? And POWER helps adults with autism find out what they're going to do and helps them find jobs, meaningful jobs, in places and careers that they love and they like. And so there's a transition period when they're still in school to figure out what their skills are, what their desires are, what their abilities are. And then we try to match each individual with autism with a job in the community. And most of the participants in our POWER program are individuals who, without POWER, would otherwise not be employable. And that's exciting. And there are some individuals with autism that are that function quite well and can be employed in almost any job. And then there are those who really need supports. And, you know, so we focus on all of those, but we're really proud of the ones who, without us, they would not have been employed.
Now, I'm going to mention COVID. These past 18 months that interrupted education, interrupted business hours and jobs, and for someone who really craves or needs consistency, were you able to come up with anything for families that have been dealing with this?
Well, I mean, COVID's disrupted the whole world, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have not stopped supporting families throughout the whole pandemic. We changed the way we support families, but we have not stopped supporting families. So we're proud of that. But it has been a challenge because, you know, our whole mission is to connect with people and to be there with them and to be in the community. And so that stopped. And to having to transition to virtual supports, doing Zoom meetings and Teams meetings and all these virtual meetings with people in boxes, you know, that's not always effective. And it's been a challenge for our families. The initial challenge of stopping stuff, you know, was hard for families. What's harder actually now is helping families to get back to where they were before the pandemic, because in some cases, the individuals have become content, have become okay with not doing stuff, have maybe drifted back to comfort situations and lost some of the gains that they made pre-pandemic. And so our challenge now is really helping to, in some cases, really coerce families to get back out there to, you know, allow their kids to be re-engaged and to get back out there in the workforce.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're crawling back out into public too. Variants and all of that other stuff, we are starting to slowly come back to the events and the stuff that we were doing a couple of years ago. And you've got some fundraising coming up because you got to pay the bills. Walk for Autism is coming up.
The Walk for Autism is certainly a fundraising event, but it's more than that. The Walk for Autism is our family reunion. And every year we meet at Cape Henlopen State Park in Lewis, and this year again in Fox Point State Park in Wilmington. And our families come together. It's a cathartic event, to be honest. Families who have been isolated because of the impact of autism for, you know, the whole year come together with their support systems, their moms and dads and grandparents and uncles and neighbors and teachers, and they develop these teams that support their loved one with autism, and they name their team, and they got T-shirts and signs, and they're out there with no worries about what people are going to think about them, which is in contrast to some of the other times they get out in the community, because everyone at the Walk for Autism understands you. And so it's a really cool event to be at. We're excited this year at Fox Point State Park is going to be October 16th, and at Cape Henlopen State Park, it's going to be October 23rd. Registration is open. You can go to our website, autismdelaware.org, for that information. And we're just hoping to get as many families to come back out as possible. We've created the event with social distancing in mind. We are having staggered start times for families, for those who are going to be more cautious and want to be more cautious. We'll still have food trucks, and we'll still have some play areas and things like that for those who want to gather in group and in community. But we're going to have the walk. We're excited about the walk, and we're certainly hoping that as many people as possible can come.
If I was a young family, I think this would just be a wonderful opportunity to meet other families with kids who are older or grown-ups at this point, and see what's, you know, how they're handling things and what they're doing and how they're enjoying themselves on this day. Information is available, too, for them, right? Do you have information booths and people
Absolutely.
There?
Absolutely. We have at our Walk for Autism, we have information booths about Autism Delaware, so families can find out about what we do. But we're also going to have representatives from different state agencies there, state agencies that they might want to interact with or sign up for or be engaged with. And so we'll have representatives at the Walk for Autism there from a bunch of different state agencies. And we're excited about those partnerships because, you know, we support families, but we don't do it alone. There's a lot of organizations around the state that support our families. So we're going to get them at this event, and I think it'll be a good resource for families.
And now, how you just mentioned that there are a lot of agencies, you've got a lot of partners out there, but you obviously need more involvement. How do we get involved with you? And this is basically the two-minute warning. How do we interact with Autism Delaware, and who are you looking for to join your mission?
Well, first and foremost, families out there that are affected by autism, you know, we want you to make sure you call us so you can get the supports that we're offering. You know, if you don't have autism in your family, then you could support us still. You come and volunteer. We always need folks to come and get engaged with us in that way. The Walk for Autism is a great fundraising opportunity. We encourage you to start a team or join a team to raise some money to help us to do the work we're doing. We also, if you're a job provider, and you think that you might want to employ a person with autism, you might think that that's a difficult thing, or that individual is not going to be as productive. And I'll tell you what, to a person, our employers would tell you that our individuals with autism are some of the best employees they have. And so I do want to encourage any of you, any listeners of yours that are out here that have the ability to hire somebody, to reach out to us. Katina Demetrio is the power director, and she's the one that handles all of our new job inquiries. She's the person to reach out to. But, you know, that's a huge thing to be able to employ a person with autism.
And, of course, if you're a business and maybe you're a movie theater or you are a store, you're one of those activity centers and you'd like to create an area or a day for you, reach out as well?
Absolutely. We need as much support as we can get. And we've got a good staff, but a small staff. And we can't do the work we do without individuals stepping up and volunteering and leading efforts. And we will do a lot to support you.
And, of course, all of this is on your website.
All of it is on our website, but I'll tell you what, it's hard to do everything and keep everything on the website. And so, you know, call us. You can reach out to us on our website. You can reach out to me, or you can call our offices at any time if you're having issues.
Go to autismdelaware.org for more information. If you're a business, if you're an individual, if you are a family, that is the place to go. autismdelaware.org. And
let me give you the phone number as well, just in case people want to call us. It's 302-224-6020 to reach out to us. And we have intake people there as well if you need support to be put into our system so we can support you.
And that phone number, we'll put that on the podcast at our website. How does that sound? But go to autismdelaware.org. My guest today from Autism Delaware, David Woods, the Fund Development and Engagement Director. And thank you for coming on today.
Thank you very much for having me.
You are always welcome back. I'm Laura Lewis. This has been Focus on the Delaware Valley.